Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 290 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host once again. Hey, we're getting pretty close to that episode 300, aren't we? Hope you're here with us for that. But today, my guest is none other than Jay Ruane. If you don't know the name Jay Ruane, you really need to educate yourself. He's a lawyer, an author, an entrepreneur, a much sought-after speaker. And I'm delighted to have him on the program today. Jay is a criminal defense attorney, runs a pretty substantial criminal defense firm up in the Connecticut area. And I'm not entirely sure, I'd have to go back and look at our statistics, but I think that Jay is one of the few criminal defense attorneys that we've had on the program. And I kind of go down a rabbit hole in this episode talking about the differences that criminal defense attorneys have in terms of marketing and business development than a firm like my own, like an estate planner, would have. There's a different kind of paradigm, in my opinion. So we spend a lot of time talking about that. I can assure you that this won't be the only time you'll hear Jay on the program. We're going to have him back to talk about some other products and the book that he's written, Tiger Tactics, which we will have in the show notes here so you can get a heads up on that. But in any case, without any further delay, here is Jay Ruane. Jay Ruane, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
I'm delighted to have you with us today, Jay. I know you've been a longtime listener of the program. For that, I'm very grateful. And by way of introduction, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
So I am, I guess, a serial legal entrepreneur. I'm an author. I started out back in the 90s, which seems so long ago, as a public defender. I left that, joined, hung a shingle in my father's empty office. He was a practicing lawyer with a partner. And then when they split up, my father and I started up, found an area to focus on in DUI defense throughout the 2000s, and then really started to scale my firm and grow it probably about 2005, 2006. And we've been growing sort of ever since.
Yeah. And as I understand it now, you have multiple locations, multiple practice areas, but fundamentally focusing in on criminal defense, DUI defense, and the like. Is that correct?
Yeah, we are a criminal defense firm. We've added in the last couple of years civil rights stuff, and that really came from a spinoff. We had a criminal defense practice for years. My father was the first board certified criminal lawyer in our state. We were both presidents of the statewide Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, and that became we were known for criminal defense. A couple of years ago, now over a decade, I was approached by their division of public defender services here in the state of Connecticut. They had an overwhelming backlog of sentenced prisoners who had habeas corpus cases going on, and they really needed people to sort of attack these cases and litigate them as necessary. Because of that, I've been blessed to have walked two men out of jail on murder charges for murders they did not commit in the last 15 years, and a number other of victories, both myself and other members of my office. And the most recent one was a gentleman by the name of Marquise Jackson, who was exonerated after 19 years in jail, went to jail at 19, got out at 38, 2 days before his 30th birthday. And now my partner, Dan Lage, is starting to focus on civil rights claims in 1983 actions, with Marquise being one of his very first clients.
You know, I always find it interesting, as an aside here, when you talk to the layperson about the legal profession, you know, they're always tisking, I think, is a polite way to put it, about criminal defense attorneys. And because somehow they feel we're getting guilty people out of out of their responsibility. And yet, nobody needs an attorney more than somebody who's been falsely accused. And sadly, that happens all too often. So congrats on that, because that's really, you know, it's an important element that's so often overlooked. It's the baby that's thrown out with the bathwater, I think, sometimes. Yeah.
You know, what's really, really kind of scary about that. So we've handled in our office 100 post-conviction cases, and we've had 7 overturned convictions. So think about that. You know, 7% of people in jail could be there illegally or when they haven't committed a crime.
Falsely.
It's a huge number. Yeah, falsely accused. That's a huge number. And one of the things that's really scary to me, Neil, and I only recently have given up trying cases, but, you know, I started off in the 90s, and in Connecticut, we would do voir dire of people. And you'd ask people, you know, do you agree with the adage that it's better that 100 guilty people go free than one innocent person spend a day behind bars? And, you know, back early in my career, people would, you know, absolutely say, I absolutely agree with that. And in the last 5 to 7 years, I'm seeing more and more people say, you know, if an innocent person has to go to jail to keep me protected, I'm okay with that. And that's frightening. Very frightening. We're getting a lot of people who say, well, because they think it could never be them. And so they're like, they're okay with an innocent person having to do time. I am not.
As long as they don't know who they are.
Right. And that's a big problem in our society, I think.
I think you're right. And also, you know, nobody seeks out a criminal defense attorney faster than somebody who really needs one, you know, so
absolutely.
they can play all this, you know, lip service to I'm okay with an innocent person going to jail if it keeps me protected. But if I want a criminal defense attorney, I want the best I can find. I'm calling Jay Ruane and his folks. So tell us a little bit about, I think, and I've said this before on the program, that criminal defense work has a unique selling paradigm or sales paradigm. And I mean, you get the call when somebody is in trouble, usually where somebody's loved one is in trouble. How do you reflect that reality in your approach to business development and marketing?
So, I mean, obviously, you know, there's a lot that goes into being known as a go-to criminal defense lawyer, and your reputation, you know, both on and off the streets, on the streets for the regular people and off the streets in the legal community, I think are sort of tied together. I mean, the streets wants to know that you're going to fight for them and you're going to get a good result. They're not necessarily expecting a dismissal every time. You know, lawyers, on the other hand, lawyers want to know that you know your stuff so that when they refer a client to you, that they are that they're going to get a good result for their referral, because they don't want it impacting their relationship with the referral long term. And one of the things that's unique about criminal practice is that, you know, there is some time constraints. You know, in at least in Connecticut, it's 2 weeks after your arrest that you're going to have to appear in court. So we've got an accelerated sales process, unlike, you know, estate planning like you have, where people think about it for 18 months before they pull the trigger. You know, we have that. We also have, for the most part, there's not a lot of price awareness, because people are put in a position to meet a lawyer very quickly. So you have to sort of educate them as to what they're getting for the money that they're paying. And it's about the motions that you file. It's about your reputation in the community. It's about how you can identify cases and issues in their case. And that's, you really have to communicate that strongly. And it's important to start educating people even before they make that phone call to you. That's why, you know, my website for criminal defense has 1,500 pages of content on it. You know, I try to give them as much information as possible so that they can feel comfortable and confident that this lawyer knows what they're talking about. I couldn't imagine having a 5-page website now and expecting to get business in 2021 or 22.
Right. And, you know, my experience sharing office with, you know, criminal defense attorneys was that they had to make sure that their systems were set up such that they could respond in a moment's notice.
Oh, yeah.
because of the timeliness of what's involved. And as you said, for a practice like mine, that is not necessarily the case. I can turn my phone off at 5 o'clock and say, I'm not taking any more calls till tomorrow morning. But, in a practice like yours, that's not really reasonable. Now you can manage that to make it less disruptive on your personal life, but you have to be, I imagine, be responsive darn near around the clock.
Yeah, I mean, we are. And I mean, I think every criminal defense lawyer, they either give away their cell phone number, they have an answering service, that type of thing. But that's part of the game. That's part of what attracts, people like me to this type of law, is that, there's always a hustle. There's always action. You never know what the morning is going to bring. I could go to court on one thing and, hey, I got to leave court right now because my client's house is being raided, stuff like that. And it makes it a little more exciting. I mean, I don't get the big verdicts of the PI lawyers. I don't have the consistency of the estate planning lawyers. But man, all those guys want to talk to me at the cocktail parties because I got some good stories.
Yeah, well, that's certainly true. And I think the concept has expanded or changed. And correct me if I'm wrong. It's more than just have your cell phone available or be able to be reached round the clock. Like you said, families of people in need of services, your services, they're going to be going to the internet. They have their phone in hand. They're going to be researching you before they make that call. So content is really important. You mentioned that you had 1,500 pages of content on your website. How did you go about that process? I'm going to say one page at a time, right?
No, we try to do as many pages. We actually have a plan right now that we put into place that we're going to try to get another 500 pages up by the end of the year. So we actually have a full-time content writer in my office now after years of not having that and trying to do it ourselves and outsource it and use vendors and that type of thing. We've had Jen now for a couple of years in the office. It's really amped up our content game. But, the thing is, one of the big things about criminal practice is that it's extremely difficult, other than being known on the street as a go-to lawyer. And I had my people, I was a street lawyer. I still am. I had them for years. I had a rep among the community and people would come to me for certain things. But especially online, you really are marketing, for the most part, to the family members,
right?
The family members of people who are out there getting DUI or committing crimes, or maybe in a volatile situation that might get arrested for domestic violence. Most times, those people think that they're bulletproof and they don't plan on getting arrested. But the people who love them think that there's a possibility that they might get arrested. So part and parcel of our marketing is actually targeting the loved ones of people rather than the people themselves. Because, that local drug dealer, he doesn't think he's ever going to get caught. That's why he deals drugs, right? Mm-hmm. But his aunt, who's concerned about him, she might be doing some research. What happens if my nephew gets arrested? So if we can stay top of mind to her when that phone call does come in that he's in custody, she already has a law firm that she's maybe reached, did some research on, and we want to be that law firm.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by Center Stage and the Law Firm Marketing Minute, two great podcasts produced by Spotlight Branding. We're a legal marketing company providing content marketing for law firms that actually works, and we created these shows as a free resource to help lawyers like you learn more about marketing and business development. Every Monday, the Law Firm Marketing Minute arrives with a short 10-minute dose of marketing tips and inspiration to help you grow your firm. On Wednesdays, Center Stage arrives with perspective from other lawyers and legal industry experts to help you tackle marketing and other business development challenges. Check both of these shows out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and more. Both shows make great companions for the law entrepreneur, so subscribe today. Hope to see you there soon.
Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. Yeah, so remaining top of mind, I mean, like you said, it's both on the street and in the community. And, you know, on the street, it's really pretty much word of mouth and, you know, good results beget good results. I'm assuming you might go into situations where, you know, clients are plentiful or can be found, but more importantly, it's reputation management. So I want to circle back to the content marketing in a moment, but let's while we're on the subject, deal with reputation management. What are some of the things that you do as a firm to enhance your reputation in the community, both amongst people who need your services and for referral sources?
Well, you know, one of the things that's important to me is my pardons work. I have done a lot of it over the last year. I've had over 450 people pardoned for past crimes.
Okay.
And that is really my calling card now into the community. You know, years ago when I was a young lawyer, just hitting the streets in the late 90s, you know, I had my ins with a couple of gangs that would send me regular business. But, you know, those guys have all aged out of that thing. And now I'm helping some of those guys from the early 2000s, you know, clean up their records, get pardoned so that they can, you know, open a business and do the kind of things that they want to do now as, you know, substantial working adults in our community. And, you know, one of the things that I pride myself on is I grew up in an inner city. I grew up in a very diverse community. And I can sit down with lawyers who went to Harvard and, you know, my friend Roger, who's been a client for years, who dropped out of school at 13 and essentially was a lifelong criminal. But Roger and I could sit there and we could talk about baseball and books and that type of thing. And I can sort of cross the spectrum.
Yeah.
And I think that is a skill that not everybody has because people can pick up when you're talking down to them.
Yeah.
But when I connect with people like the inner city people that I grew up with, it's genuine. I have a lot more in common with the people from the inner city than I do with the lawyers in my community. I actually prefer to hang out with regular folk than lawyers. Just because, you know, and it's a little bit of that imposter syndrome, you know.
Yeah.
I grew up in a city and I never really felt like I belonged anywhere until I found criminal defense as a career. It wasn't until I was in my third year of law school. I mean, I knew it existed, but I didn't feel like I fit in law school at all until I started working in the criminal clinic at my law school. And then when I became a public defender and started knowing people in the community, that's when I really found, you know, my stride. And so it comes down to who you are as a person that helps a lot with that connection that's going to make you, because people at the end of the day, people hire people, right? You know, they want to hire people they connect with because it's such an important decision to make in their lives.
I also correct me if I'm wrong, public relations plays a fairly significant role in the more successful, criminal defense attorneys, getting their story out when, for instance, you've had this remarkable event where you get somebody out of jail who's been there improperly for 17 years. Do you focus on PR specifically, or is that just a byproduct of what you do?
So, over the years, the changing media landscape has really impacted our ability to utilize the media to a great extent. And we started off years ago having great relationships with the local reporters on the street, the people who would be in the courthouses covering the cases, and even the local media, the news media that were covering it on TV. But with consolidation and that type of thing, the ability to develop deep-seated relationships with the media has been impacted by lawyers across the country and myself, for sure. So in order for us to really sort of use the media to our advantage, we try to maintain those relationships as best as possible. One of the things that we do here in our office is because there's so much turnover being outside the New York City area, New Haven, our local DMA is often a station stop on the way to bigger and better things. We actually put together a reporter's guide to the Connecticut courthouses, and we would hand that out to reporters every time we went out, and we would see somebody to tell them where to go for certain cases, how to get information, with an eye towards them using us as a resource if they needed somebody to answer a question about a pending case. So that was one thing that we did very early on, and still do to this day, to get our name out there to the media. And then obviously, just like our criminal clients need us at the drop of a hat, media needs us as well. We found making relationships with the local cameramen rather than the on-air talent has been great, because those guys usually, and those women usually, are union employees that are going to be stuck at the job for, not stuck, I guess, and stuck is a bad word, but they take that job and they're with the station for 40 years because they always need that person. But the talent may come up and go. And so that's really how we developed the relationship, is actually targeting the people who work with the talent rather than the talent themselves.
I think that's so smart because, growing up here in the Washington, D.C. area, our local Channel 4 News, same four people were there for 20 years. I mean, you grew up with Jim Vance and Dorian Gensler. And now, as you say, the nature of the business has changed, that the on-air talent turns over all the time. But it's kind of like, if you want to get something done in the courthouse, you make friends with the clerks and the secretaries.
Exactly.
Because they really make the courthouse run. And the same thing is true with local media. If you want to get somewhere with local media, you work with, as you said, the cameramen and the producers. The producers are the ones that span time at the stations. I want to circle back though to your content marketing. I found it fascinating. You alluded to, or actually expressly said, that you've brought the copywriting in house. Now, I'm assuming when you first started out, that wasn't the case. You either did it yourself, or then you outsourced it to virtual assistants, or part-time support, or a vendor, or something along those lines. And now you've come full circle and hired somebody and brought them in house. Tell us about that journey and what you experienced.
So, it has been an interesting journey. I started out years ago and I was the one creating the content. If you go back on the Internet Archive, seeing some of my first websites back from the late 90s, they're really terrible. I'm almost embarrassed that they're stored there in perpetuity. But
we all had those.
Yeah. So, but what I found early on was that there was a certain segment of the population that was finding me through the Internet. And we're really sort of devouring any content that I put out there. And even back in 2000, I mean, we're now talking over 20 years ago, I would have people come in for consults and they would have printed out every page of my website and made notes and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So that was my first realization that, people who were in a jam, like my clients were, they wanted to sort of relieve the anxiety by learning as much as they can in a short amount of time. And so
that was my first foray into creating content. And I had a very simple system back then. Back then, lawyers would dictate. I'm sure some lawyers still do it now, but I type everything myself. But I had an old school secretary who took dictation. So I would have a recorder in my car and I would just dictate my content and she would type it up and then I'd add it to the website using Adobe PageMill. God, that's such a long, old product.
Oh, remember PageMill fondly.
Yeah. And so we would put up that content and I was putting up as much content as I can. And then that turned into me looking for outside sources. And it just so happened that a family friend of my wife's, their daughter had gotten out of college in the early 2000s, early teens, I guess, because she's been with me now for a decade. And she was an English major, didn't know what she wanted to do with her life, but I knew she liked to write. And I said, you know, have you ever done technical writing? Have you ever thought about writing for business? And so I brought her in, gave her a job. She took akin to it, then went on to get a master's degree in technical writing at DePaul, continued to work for me remotely. And that's really when I thought, hey, you know what? I could have somebody continue to work remotely for me doing this stuff. She's now come back full circle. She's back in state, but I haven't seen her in a couple of years, you know, for the most part, because she grinds the content. It gets submitted for review. And she also helps me out with some other stuff on the web. She's gotten really good at WordPress over the years because instead of me having to upload it, she takes care of that. And I just give her the okay. And having somebody who's available to just churn the content has been really good for us because as things happen, we're able to react and put out information about certain things. So we'll have some incidences here in Connecticut that might get picked up by the newspaper. We can do a little news jacking because we're putting out press releases on subject because I have somebody who can focus on that. And my latest thing really has been about 6 months ago, we added a full-time photographer and videographer to our team. And we've been able to really, really churn photos and video content over the 6 months. And I'm kicking myself for not doing sooner, but he's been an incredible addition to our team and just getting stuff done and moved and onto the page.
Wow. It's a model that I think more attorneys should take advantage of because we as attorneys, we learn to write in a specific way. We write for the court oftentimes, or we write for other attorneys. It takes a special skill to write for the public.
Sure does.
And to be cognizant of that. So I think either outsourcing it or bringing that resource in-house is something that attorneys should spend more time considering. And the same way with the video, I'm happy to hear that you're doing that because I think that's the next vanguard. We've talked about that many times here, and I've made the suggestion that a great resource to find a videographer or a photographer is your local community college. Because almost all of them have radio and TV production areas of study at the community college. And those folks are just looking for content to create themselves as they learn the business.
Absolutely. You know, it's great to take advantage of those people that are out there. And lawyers have a tendency to not think outside the box. What I did is I actually went to a local up-and-coming wedding photographer, videographer that I had met at an event. I was like, look, I can give you a job that's 4 days a week and gives you benefits.
Yeah.
He was
a lot to offer in that regard. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit. I know you have multiple locations. You're now managing a staff that's grown sizably beyond just you and couple of folks in the office. Tell me, about your tech stack and how you go about running all of this various elements of the business.
Okay, so I came about and built my practice long before the cloud-based resources like Clio and Filevine existed.
Dropbox.
And so being the dinosaur that I am. I years ago, 18, 19 years ago, was like, I need to look at what's out there for a CRM. And at the time, there was really Time Matters. It was like it was the big one. And I took a look at it and I was like, you know, this seems like it's way overkill in some areas and not robust enough in others. And at the time I had a young man who was working for me, who went on to law school actually. And he said, you know, I just graduated from college and I have two friends who majored in database design. You know, this is essentially a database you want to create. Mm-hmm. What if you did that? And so we found some people online that work with a program called FileMaker. FileMaker,
FileMaker Pro.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we have had a FileMaker database since FileMaker, I think 8, and we have been working with FileMaker ever since then. I've got a good company that I keep on retainer, and basically, you know, every time I hear of Clio or Fastcase or Smokeball or FileVine or any cool idea mm-hmm. that those people in those communities are talking about, I call up my developer and say, let's add it to our own FileMaker system. So we do texting through it. We have an API to handwritten so my people can send note cards out. It's connected to our MailChimp so we can send our newsletter and everything. So it's essentially, it's a homebrewed version, but it gives us exactly what we need, nothing more, nothing less. That's the basis. And then of course we use G Suite and Slack regularly. We use for our social posting, we use the social super system at FirmFlex. But really that's, you know, it's a FileMaker is the workhorse of our organization.
Back in the day, I tell the story many times that law is my fourth career. My second career was helping to build hardware and software systems for the government in the space industry, in the aerospace industry. And my last job was managing 70 software developers, helping build a communication system for an air defense system for a NATO country. Anyway,
oh, cool.
We ran that entire project on FileMaker.
It's beautiful software.
We ran FileMaker 2.
Okay.
I was on FileMaker 2. Okay. The original FileMaker was kind of a graphic oriented database and wasn't even relational then. It was a flat file database. And then my third career was owning and operating a martial arts studio. I ran the entire martial arts business for 12 years on FileMaker.
Wow.
Adding to it, developing it. And when I started my law practice and then went to law school and started my law practice, for some reason I felt like rolling my own in FileMaker was not the way to go. And I've regretted that to this day.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, you know, it's been a great tool for us.
So congratulations to you. I will tell you, whenever, we're completely off the subject here now, but I will tell you, whenever I review law firm practice management systems, I always go to the reporting function and to see how easy or how complicated it is to generate reports from my CRM or my practice management system. And I always compare it to FileMaker, because in FileMaker, you can create a report and make it look like anything you want it to look like from the database. It's as easy as doing a mail merge, and it's phenomenal. And I don't know of any practice management software that has the same reporting capability as FileMaker does.
Yeah, you know, I've been really blessed. I've been really blessed. And we actually use our FileMaker reporting and another company for our management reporting and marketing reporting called Dash This. And combined between the two of those, I get my reports every Monday morning, and I know exactly what's going on all across the world in my operation. Cause you know, I have a number of overseas talent. I've got a lawyer in Argentina. I've got, you know, staff in Honduras and Mexico. I've got other lawyers and staff in Florida and North Carolina, South Carolina, mm-hmm. all over. And I can see what everybody's working on in reports very easily. And it's not a big brother thing. It's just making sure we're all marching in the right direction.
Well, it's also being able to see the data that you are collecting in a way that makes sense to you.
Sure.
Because sometimes that may be counterintuitive to how a developer thinks it ought to be presented. Like, I have multiple examples. I don't want to speak poorly about some of the applications and products that support this podcast, but I never was able to figure out the reporting function. Never.
Yeah.
Never. And so I'm just pleased as I could be to hear that you're still working in FileMaker. I think that's great.
I love it.
I think that's great. What's the biggest challenge you have these days?
Well, for us, COVID really threw us for a loop coming out of COVID. You know, Connecticut
stopped everything.
Yeah, it stopped everything. Well, and it stopped, there was a lot of stuff going on for us, really. People stopped going to restaurants, stopped going out. And unfortunately, it's good for the community in that, people aren't getting arrested for DUI and putting other people at risk. But when you're a DUI lawyer, it impacts you. I mean, we used to have 16, 17, 18,000 DUI cases a year. And in the last 2 years, we've had like 4,000 in the state of Connecticut. So it's dramatically impacting bottom line business. But that's okay. We were able to ramp up the pardon stuff and that type of thing. The other thing that has really impacted us has been changes to some legislation here and overall attitudes of law enforcement, which is starting to change back. But there was a long while where law enforcement wasn't making as many arrests because they felt that they weren't appreciated as much. They local law enforcement was not doing the arrests that were typical for the time period. That's starting to come back around. And really, the biggest problem we have institutionally as criminal defense lawyers, in our state at least, is the fact that our courts have decided that, notwithstanding the fact that they invested money in getting technology, they had a bunch of lawyers who developed new ways of getting things done, our courts are marching back to a pre-COVID, everybody show up, everybody stand around, we'll get to you when we can, waste of time policy. And that's my biggest challenge because, I, like everybody else, I've lost a couple of employees during the course of the COVID break. And it's difficult to be in four places at once. They are sending out court assignment notices without checking with the lawyers, either on the state or on the defense side. And it's just very difficult. And it's disheartening to see that we had this epic opportunity to change things. Yeah, and they just said, we're not going to do it.
One of the things I was saying for, throughout the pandemic is that some things we're not going to go back to. I used to make the joke that it took me longer to put my coat and tie on than it does for some scheduling hearings.
Yeah.
And it was just a complete and utter waste of time. I thought now that we have Zoom and it's become ubiquitous within the system that we would stay that way. And to hear that some jurisdictions are marching backwards back to stand around and wait, that's discouraging.
Yeah. I have been an outspoken critic of our state judicial department since the beginning of COVID. I think, part of the problem, and I'm going to be perfectly honest, and I know it's not something that many people like to hear in our state, but I will say it, for a defense lawyer, a significant portion of my population is lower wage earners, many people of color, and people who don't get vacation days with their hourly jobs.
Yeah.
And so when you drag them to court every 3 weeks and they have to miss a day of work because they don't know if they're going to be done with court at 9:15 or 3:15, you are penalizing them for defending themselves. And you get these people, unfortunately, they come to a point and it breaks my heart. And they say, look, I can't miss another day of work. I'm just going to plead guilty. And
I'll take a worse deal because I can't afford not to.
Because I can't afford it. And the problem is that the people who are making these decisions, the judicial department and the executive department in the state of Connecticut, are all people who are divorced significantly from the inner city defendants. They only ever see them in a courthouse looking down on them. They get vacation, they get unlimited sick time. They don't know what it's like that, a day's pay can make the difference between, feeding your kids or paying your rent this month. I will continue to bang on that drum as loud as possible that the Connecticut Judicial Department is just terrible in the way they treat criminal defendants.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to end on that note. I'd rather end on a little more positive note. Let's start with this. tell our audience how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up on anything you've had to offer today.
Sure. So not only do I have my firm here in Connecticut, I'm also a published author. My book, Tiger Tactics, with my four co-authors was number one for 20 weeks or so on Amazon. That was in the legal practice management category. And if you get the book, you can find out about all of our troubles in building our practices and the different things where we failed. And we sort of bared our soul in the book just so that people can see that, you know, it's never always rosy. I mean, that's what most people see out there. You only put out the good stuff, but there's a lot of warts and all in building a business that we did. I also have two other projects. I have Get Firm Flex, which is a social media marketing agency for lawyers. I've become known on the seminar circuit for talking about how lawyers get social media wrong and what they can do right. Last but not least is my newest product, Finalize, which is Finalize. And that's just an automatic daily coach. So basically, for people who follow the traction system and do EOS, it says define your rocks, and every day it's shooting you back. What do you need to do to move forward on that type of thing? So I have a lot of little things going on.
Great.
I tend to be an idea guy, throw as much out there as I can. So you can find me on all the social platforms at Jay Ruane. And I'm always open to talk about stuff like this. I love talking about my practice and how we've grown.
Well, listen, let's get you back on the program, if for nothing else, to talk about Get Firm Flex, so we can find out a little more about how you manage social media, because we never got around to talking about
that. Yeah, sure. I'd love to do that.
All right, Jay. Thanks ever so much for joining us today and being a guest on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks, Neil.
Well, how about that? That's a wrap for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors once again, as usual, Daylight by Market Circle, Spotlight Branding, and Ruby, as in Ruby Receptionist. If you have a chance, swing on by our website at www.lawentrepreneur.com. You can check out a bunch of information and resources there. And if that doesn't satisfy your needs, swing on by our Facebook page or Twitter page. You can find those just by simply searching for The Law Entrepreneur. And if you'd be so kind, I would greatly appreciate it if you go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and an honest review. If you find this podcast is helpful and that you're getting value out of it, it does help with our visibility and ensures that we're going to be there for another 5 years or so, as this has been quite the run. And I'm greatly appreciative of your interest in The Law Entrepreneur.